On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy. Supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
Now, it's fairly rare that an individual piece of legislation, particularly one that might be described as being fairly technical, receives as much attention as it has done across society in the last couple of days. But that is the case with the Mother and Baby Homes Bill, which is now on the desk of President Higgins, awaiting signature. As of this lunchtime, 131,000 people have signed a petition demanding that the records from the Mother and Baby Homes Commission are not sealed for 30 years. And many wonder if those who lived in homes or who were born there may now again be failed by the state. Well, the person responsible for that legislation was the Minister for Children, Roderick O'Gorman. He's with us now. Minister, first of all, your reflections on the last week.
I think it's been a difficult week. And what I'm most conscious of is that this debate has created a lot of anxiety for the survivors in mother and baby homes. And to the extent that things that I've done, or perhaps my failure to communicate or better engage with survivors groups, I regret that deeply. I'm very aware now that when the Commission on Mother and Baby Homes report is published, we need to have very strong systems in place and support those groups that support survivors, because I think when the report comes out, it's going to be a very detailed report. It's going to be over 4,000 pages long. And I think it is going to be incredibly difficult reading for everyone, I think, across our society, but particularly for the survivors of mother and baby homes. So we need to be ready to support them at that time, and we will be ready.
If people accept, and this is obviously a very complex area and there's been a lot of supposition and maybe a little bit of misunderstanding around what exactly happened in the Oireachtas during the week. So can I take it then that your position is that the legislation which went through the Dáil and Seanad this week did not in itself implement a seal on the records from this commission?
No, it didn't. This legislation was all about securing a database out of the archive and making it available for use. The Commission of Investigation into the Mother and Baby Homes, it was set up under a piece of legislation from 2004, the 2004 Commission of Investigations Act. And it's that legislation that states the archive is sealed once the Commission reports. My department became aware that over the course of the 5 years, the Commission had created a database which links the women who went into the mother and baby homes to their children as they were subsequently adopted on. And that database is formed from scanning thousands of documents from the various mother and baby homes and drawing them all together in a computerized and searchable format. So we identified, and indeed the commission itself identified, that this would be an incredibly valuable resource, both for existing tracing services that exist, but in particular in light of my commitment to bring in improved information and tracing legislation, which is badly needed in this country.
Yeah, and there's been a lot of other discussion as well about adoption and access to records as well, and it sort of touches on that whole area. So if we accept that the legislation this week didn't itself impose a seal, but this is also something which presumably many people could have seen coming, because, as you say, the Commission itself has been compiling this database, and I think people would have been able to foresee almost from the day that the Commission was established that we were going to find ourselves in a situation where it would have compiled very sensitive and very, you know, invaluable records, which would ultimately then have been put away. So people would say, although it's not the legislation this week that enshrined the seal, couldn't this legislation this week have done more to guarantee that they wouldn't be sealed?
And look, I've indicated this week I've made it clear in the Dáil and the Seanad that I am very aware, particularly when it comes to personal sensitive information, that the way that the current law from 2004 treats that everything is sealed in the archive, it's not morally feasible to do that anymore. People deserve information about their early life. So I've committed to engage both with the Attorney General, but also to work with the Oireachtas Committee on Children, Equality, Disability and Integration to see if a legislative solution to that particular point is necessary. And I'm determined to ensure that we can give people access to early life information. I think that's the very least that survivors and mother and baby homes deserve.
Knowing the sensitivity of the whole topic, though, why did you tell the Dáil on Thursday evening that you weren't going to accept any amendments? Because, you know, a lot of other people, that they would have come to the table with the same bona fides as you. They would have wanted to make sure that records could be accessed in a way which is both legal but also proper. And they were trying to bring forward amendments to make sure that was the case. And then it appeared as if you just waved your hand and said, sorry, lads, no can do.
Well, in the Dáil, I was bringing forward a number of amendments myself that were on foot of the very lengthy debate that we'd had in the Seanad the week before. We had a really good debate in the Seanad, and senators had highlighted a range of issues. And I brought forward two amendments that would deal specifically with issues that senators and obviously the political parties the senators represent had highlighted with me. In the Dáil, I indicated that there were certain points that I wasn't proposing to accept amendments on within this legislation, but I was proposing other solutions. And particularly, I proposed bringing in the Oireachtas Committee that I spoke about earlier on, to actually, so we can bring in the legal academics, but also we can bring in survivors and actually see what are the legal tools we need to bring in to actually address the issue of access to information.
But so the way it came across, Minister, and sorry to interrupt you, the way it came across when I think it was Holly Cairns of the Social Democrats who asked you that question, it came across as if you were simply point blank refusing to entertain any amendments. And whether that was a blanket decision or whether it was each on their merits and you couldn't accept them, it might undermine the ability of that Oireachtas Committee to work with you in future, given they're all going to have you saying no still ringing in their ears.
Well, look, as I say, in the Dáil, the amendments I was bringing in the Dáil were explicitly to deal with points that opposition and indeed government senators had raised during the Seanad debate. I suppose I was asked a straight question in the Dáil. I gave a straight answer. Looking back on it, I can see how it didn't come across well, but I'm absolutely committed to working with TDs and senators across all parties to address the issue of access to early life information. And I think when you listen to the Dáil debates and Seanad debates over the last 2 weeks, I do think there's a strong degree of unanimity across all parties on that particular issue. So I'm positive that we can actually work together in the Dáil committee, in the Oireachtas committee, to achieve that.
Okay, we did then also have the intervention from the Data Protection Commissioner, which emerged on Friday afternoon, and it said that any blanket seal on records was not legally appropriate because, as they said, you know, the GDPR, this new European data law, which existed now for 2.5 years, it gives people an absolute right to access some of their own records. And if you are deciding to seal away those records, that would be a breach of that. So what are you going to do about that? Or was that not the sort of warning that you should have had before this legislation was being drafted up?
Yeah, well, I suppose the intervention from the Data Protection Commissioner was not in relation to my own bill. It was in relation to the 2004 Act and an amendment that was brought into that in 2018. My department had engaged extensively with the Data Protection Commissioner on the bill that was passed this week. They'd asked us to make some changes to the data protection impact assessment. And when we made those changes, they were satisfied with the bill that was passed this week.
So they're saying that it's the 2004 Act, which is a breach of GDPR and not the one that you brought through this week.
Yes, that's what they were highlighting.
But knowing that's the case, then why couldn't you have done more this week to address that then?
Their intervention is significant. And as I said in the Dáil, I'm engaging with the Attorney General specifically on the point that they raised as regards the 2004 Act. And I'll be engaging further with them on that particular point next week.
Does the Attorney General agree with that assessment?
The Attorney General will be coming back with his opinion on the contribution from the DPC next week.
Okay, so we won't know until then whether he agrees with that assessment from the DPC and then what can be done about it.
Exactly. But as I said, I suppose the key point is I'm committed, I suppose, irrespective, to addressing the issue of access to personal information. Whether that's whether a legislative response is necessary to do that, I'll undertake that.
Okay. Obviously, then, as you've made pretty clear, as far as it's your understanding, and I think a lot of others would agree, it is not the law passed this week which seals the records. It's the law from 16 years ago, the law which sets up commissions of investigation. All of that being as it may, if you've committed to trying to make sure that people will have access to their own records in this database, how quickly will that process get going and how quickly might we have people being able to access those records?
Well, I'm willing to engage with the Oireachtas Committee as quickly as I can to achieve that. And again, because there is such strong support for this issue across the parties, I believe we actually can move on this issue very quickly.
I mean, it must be something urgent, though, because as you said yourself, if it's morally not feasible for someone to be denied their records, we could have a situation where when the Commission finishes its work in the next couple of weeks, or and when it hands over this database in a couple of months, Tusla will have this database and you will say it's not morally feasible to deny someone their records. But anyone who goes to Tusla and asks for a copy of their records is going to be turned down, aren't they?
Well, I think it's important to say that Tusla is bound by GDPR, and my bill clearly states that Tusla is bound by GDPR. So there's no question as regards the database that transfers to Tusla. There's full GDPR rights as regards that.
So when Tusla has this database, if someone who was a survivor of mother and baby homes or may have given birth in one were to approach Tusla and ask for a copy of the records, which may include some information about, you know, their natural birth family, that's something which will be available to them.
Well, it's something that Tusla can. It's a request that Tusla will treat as a data access request through the mechanisms of GDPR. Yes.
Okay. So that will be something which is available to survivors, irrespective of the impasse about the database held by your department.
Exactly, and that it will only be available because of the bill we passed this week.
Okay. There was one other piece of information which came up this week, which I imagine is probably occupying some of your mind, but you haven't had much of an opportunity to think about because of mother and baby homes. You're also the minister who's responsible for the future of the direct provision system. And this week we received a long-awaited report chaired by the former Secretary General to the European Commission. That's Catherine Day. She says basically the direct provision is not fit for purpose and has to be replaced. It's a fairly landmark report. What are you going to do about it?
Well, it is a very significant report, and we'll be using that to influence the white paper that the government is working on at the moment. As you know, in the programme for government, we committed to ending direct provision, and the first step towards that is a white paper that's going to set out the new vision for how we accommodate people in the international protection process, but also how we move to that as well. But obviously, look, this is a process that's going to take time. So we wanted to, this week, to show, I suppose, initial steps to improve life for people in direct provision at the moment. So we announced a number of actions between myself and Minister McEntee. So Minister McEntee is reducing the time period within which someone can seek labour market access from 9 months to 6 months. Minister Eamon Ryan has committed to introducing legislation to allow people living in direct provision to apply for driver's licences. And in my own department, we've put in place vulnerability assessments. So when people arrive here, they can be assessed to see if they need any additional supports, if they were the victims of torture or sexual violence on their flight from their original country. And we're also getting HICWA in to inspect direct provision centres to make sure they're meeting the legal standards that apply from January of this year. So we're acting to immediately improve standards and the quality of life for people living in direct provision, while also bringing forward the white paper by the middle of December, which will set out how we achieve an entirely new system of accommodation.
This report outlines that entirely new system as being something of a three-stage system, and it wants to have it in place by the middle of 2023. Is that something that you can commit to implementing now?
I think we'll set out the time frame within the white paper. I think direct provision itself was brought in as a kind of an interim solution to a problem that was experienced in kind of the late 90s as regards the accommodation of people seeking asylum in this country. And it's still with us 20 years later. So what I don't want to see is a kind of a rush system that doesn't actually deliver for the people who are here seeking international protection. I've always spoken about doing this in the context of the lifetime of a government. I don't think we should raise false hope as regards the speed within which we can do this. Direct provision is an extensive system at the moment. We have a lot of people living in it, and we have to make sure that the new system is properly designed and properly implemented so it doesn't end up delivering the same kind of accommodation that doesn't meet people's dignity as the existing direct provision system has.
Final question before I let you go, Minister. As the Minister responsible for children and for youth affairs generally, do you believe that schools are safe?
I do believe schools are safe. I've always believed that we need to reopen schools. And I believe that on the basis of research my department has done over the summer as regards the impact of that very long period out of schools on children and young people, particularly children from disadvantaged backgrounds or children who have special educational needs. They suffered particularly during the lockdown in March, April and May. And we've brought in public health guidance into our schools, and our teachers have been absolutely heroic in the way they've implemented those. And I think we've seen that the incidence of transmission of COVID in schools is much lower than in other parts of society. So I do believe schools are safe.
Okay, we will leave it there. Minister for Children and Equality, Roderick O'Gorman, thank you very much for joining us this lunchtime on The Record.